There is a saying, sometimes attributed to Voltaire, that the perfect is the enemy of the good. It means that we should not let the ideal, the best possible outcome, get in the way of a good, even a good enough result. Good is good. Trying to be perfect can cloud our view of what is good. Even worse, it can become an obstacle to even getting to the good. If it's not perfect, it's not worth doing somehow. When I was searching for the origins of the phrase, Wikipedia directed me to an entry on the Nirvana fallacy, which is closely related to the perfect solution fallacy. That the perfect, the ideal, is ever possible. The tendency, this is a quotation, the tendency to assume that there is a perfect solution to a particular problem. By creating a false dichotomy, that presents one option, which is obviously advantageous, while at the same time completely implausible. A person using the Nirvana fallacy can attack any opposing idea because it is imperfect. Yet it is also possible to reverse this saying, for sometimes the good can be the enemy of the perfect, or perhaps the best. We'll never achieve the ideal, yet sometimes what we call good enough really isn't. It can keep us from going beyond, pushing ahead, discovering new territory. It is one of those paradoxes that I love so well. Yet honestly, you, as a congregation, are far more likely to let the perfect get in the way of the good because you really are good. Far from perfect, but very good. Please never doubt that. I have enough direct experience of congregations, and I've heard some truly hair-curling tales of dysfunction, even toxicity, in other churches, to be able to assure you that you are a grand congregation.
Amen.
And I told that to all the ministers who were interested possibly in serving you and asked me about you. And yet, my job here as your interim minister has been to hold up the mirror to you. And in fact, this mirror has been sitting in my office, lo, these 2 years. It's to hold up a mirror to you and say, this is what I see. Is this what you see? Is this how you want to be seen? I got to bring some fresh eyes to this congregation and let you know what you looked like to me. Part of that mirror, actually it is two sides, part of the mirror is for reflecting back to you what you do well. For sometimes in the face of what would be perfect, we judge what is good too harshly, or we don't even see the good at all. And part is for holding up some of the other things that perhaps you could observe and see in yourself and improve upon. But generally, oh my gosh, you have done so well through this time of transition. You engaged the tasks of interim ministry. There are 5 of them, but they're all pointing to the final task of all. And this is some of my favorite language. That final task is to renew vision, strengthening stewardship, preparing for new growth and new professional leadership, ready to embrace the future with anticipation and zest. Yes, and yes, and yes, you have done all of that. You do have a stronger sense of your identity as a congregation, both on your own and in partnership with your minister-to-be. And I know you haven't always felt so, yet you are a congregation of generous people, sharing your resources abundantly. You gave of yourselves and your devotion to this community abundantly enough to call a new minister, to pay a fine staff more fairly, to hire a volunteer and social justice coordinator, all of whom will be able to work with the Justice Council, which is also a dream you've had for a while that's coming together, to coordinate your efforts for equity and kindness in the world. Oh, yes, and at the same time, you gave enough money to pay off your remaining mortgage in 3 years, which will free up even more resources, which can help fund even more of your dreams. Yes, you are a generous people. You are a justice-seeking people also. And you also are people seeking a deeper connection with the holy, with each other. You are now on your fourth round of chalice circles this summer, where people meet to discuss topics of meaning and purpose in the world. And the First Quest program, which is a spiritual practice, spiritual deepening program, was completed just this last April, and there are already plans underway for the next cycle. And you have two lively groups coming together to practice more compassionate communication. And these are all relatively new. You've tons of other things you have kept going well and strongly through this time. You also have a strong and committed board of directors and strong leaders in many of the committees and groups doing the sometimes less than glamorous work of the institutional sides of Booth's mission and ministry. There are yet some efforts that need renewed leadership. And yet, let that not be a time that blinds you. May not that be a circumstance that blinds you to the good and devoted leadership you have throughout the congregation. You have a beautiful choir that we've gotten to hear a little bit more frequently. And celebrants have helped me create meaningful worship and brought even more voices to this pulpit. You are a good, healthy, strong, thoughtful, generous, justice-seeking people. Yet, of course, there are still things not yet come to fruition, some issues for you yet to address. My mirror also reflects out some of the ways that you can more fully live your mission. You are sometimes a bit insular, looking inward, taking care of and protecting what you already have, not reaching out or sharing all your resources as you might. I have said from the beginning that you have created holy ground here in your outdoor sanctuary. It is one of your most abundant resources, and you are rightly proud of it. You put a lot of your time, talent, and treasure into it. Yet the mirror asks who those resources are for. How do you use them to serve your mission? And you have been addressing those questions, and soon there is going to be a task force for you to consider further how you can use the Chelan property out back, that property in particular, to support the wider mission of the church. Think outward as well as caring for what you have. Share your resources. And you are a warm and welcoming people. Though I will tell you, not always as quite as welcoming in practice as I know you would most like to be. This has been an area where there have been some gaps in your leadership efforts, which is partly why you want a volunteer coordinator, and yet welcoming is everyone's work. If you ever hear yourself, I certainly know I've said these words, if you ever hear yourself or someone else saying, somebody should do something or other, somebody should do that, consider being somebody. That somebody might indeed be you. Yet I also want, it's also important to remember why you are welcoming, why this hospitality is so important. I recently reposted something on Facebook, which was a banner created by some other church somewhere that summed up its mission so perfectly. Be the church. Protect the environment. Care for the poor. Forgive often. Reject racism. Fight for the powerless, share earthly and spiritual resources, embrace diversity, love God, enjoy this life. I have said this to you before. The church is not here for you. It's not here to meet your needs. It is so easy for us all to fall into that kind of mindset in our consumer-driven, customer-service-oriented society. Now, please understand, I very much hope that you find what you seek here, that you continue to find here things that are meaningful to you, that bind up your wounds when you are hurting. That support you and your family, whatever configuration and time of life your family is in. I hope very much that Booth is a caring community for you when you are in need. That it gives you opportunities to serve others and to serve the world and to make a difference. A place that gives you a greater voice than you would have by yourself. I hope that the church does all of this and more. And yet, serving the particular needs of its members and friends is not the primary purpose of the church. The primary purpose is to live out your mission in the world. All of those things in that Facebook post. And if you, as individuals and a congregation, do all of those things, then I suspect you will find that you meet most of the other needs of the people, and some you didn't even realize you needed. That is why you reach out and are welcoming, because never forget how much the world needs you and your mission. The mission is more fully realized when you reach more people. And the more the mission is realized, the greater the caring, spiritual deepening, and justice making a community you are able to create. There is also a welcoming task force getting underway to consider how you can be more welcoming and invitational to people. Inviting people in to transform their lives and then go forth and transform the world, to share your mission. And though, yes, there is a specific task force looking at this, pay attention to what they report out to you, because this, again, is everyone's work. Another thing you have not yet fully realized in this interim time is a covenant of right relations. Generally, you are a healthy congregation without dysfunctional conflict, though you have had your moments. I fear again that we are sometimes too influenced by a culture that pits us against them, a culture that assumes opposition and demonizes those who disagree with us. It's all over our culture, and it gets inside of us even if we try to resist. And I think it gives us a kind of stressful milieu that we move in, and all of us are too easily offended or suspicious of one another, even in church. So I ask you to remember, when things do get a little tense, you're all on the same side. There's no one here really seeking power and influence. And don't be hard on each other, especially in email. This is one of those things that every 2 or 3 years, or maybe every 2 or 3 months, I need to be told again, reminded. But when you are feeling really strongly about something, don't put it in an email. I've seen some pretty hot emails fly here at Booth. Not a lot, but enough for me to hold up this mirror to. Not all the processes and twists and turns of the path that you've been on have been perfect. You are fully human after all. And sometimes I think we get this expectation that people that will bring our best selves to church and leave our personal agendas at the door. After all, isn't it the purpose of the church to ground us in a deeper spiritual practice and help us live our values more closely with greater intention and integrity? Of course it is. And that doesn't mean that we're able to do it all the time. Remember that thing in the list, forgive often? We have to do that perhaps most especially at church. The point of being in a covenantal community, having a covenant of right relations, is not so that everyone will always act selflessly, wisely, and kindly, but that when we don't, we have ways to mend our covenant. A covenant of right relations is not so that everyone will behave well all the time, but that we have a way of mending things when we don't. Not all the processes by which you do the work of the church are perfect, yet also always remember to look at the good result. Sometimes I think we have a too human tendency to try to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And then remember that it's not even perfect. You get to be good and not perfect. And then Mary Oliver tells us that you don't even have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. I first heard that poem before I was even a Unitarian, long before I knew that Mary Oliver was also a Unitarian. And it was a salve to my soul, a moment of salvation. Don't let the perfect get in the way of the good. And don't let the good keep you from the fullness of your humanity, its glory and its despair. For the last couple of months, people have been thanking me for the work I have done with you. And yet, it is all work we have done together. It's impossible to separate out specifically who is responsible for which part of the good work we have done. I will take my part of the credit, though I can't really parse out what exactly is mine. And so let this simply be an example of how much you do, that you do and do in partnership with a minister. I am so happy to have been able to serve you in this time of transition. And yet, I can't fully express my gratitude to you. Being here in Boise has been so good for me and my ministry that I cannot thank you enough. I came to you weary, far more weary than I hope I let on. I was, after serving in a congregation for 10 years, I was starting to doubt myself as a minister. This is such hard work, and it can wear us down. And I came here, and you welcomed me. You listened to me, most of the time. You appreciated all that we do together, and I have been loving preaching from this pulpit to all of you, and something's going on here, and it's not all me, because this preaching thing is relational. And so if I'm good in this pulpit, it's because you are good in the pews, and I thank you for that. And then add in my cancer diagnosis last spring. Not what any of us were expecting. And you were simply magnificent to me. I learned something. They talk about ministry being, more than anything else, holding a non-anxious presence. Even in the midst of craziness and tension, to be the non-anxious presence. Well, I learned that that goes both ways. Because when I came to the leadership and I explained that I was facing this diagnosis and I wasn't certain what I would do and whether I could continue to serve, you were all so good, so non-anxious, so present to me. And if you didn't realize this at the time, but if you had all been so anxious and said, oh my gosh, this is terrible, what are we going to do? I wouldn't have been able to stay here with you, because I wouldn't have been able to manage your anxiety along with my own. But I got to stay because you rose to the occasion so well. You cared for me well. I know that people would have been happy to do even more, and yet your greatest gift to me was respecting my privacy that I found I needed. I learned so much about myself and the nuances of pastoral care. And then you add in that I was here at Boise, and I was being treated at the Mountain States Tumor Institute, and I can't think of a better place on earth that I could have been through this time. So I do want you to know that my prognosis is good. My cancer was found unusually early. And between two surgeries and chemotherapy, there is every chance that it is simply gone, never to return. That is as likely a story as any. A likely story, and I'm sticking to it. And so now my plan is to take a personal sabbatical year. I plan to live at the Oregon coast and rest, relax, recreate, refresh, renew, read, write, and yes, take walks on the beach with Scout the Wonder Dog. I've also been accepted at the pastoral leadership program at Seattle University, which I'll be able to commute to for four intensives through the year. It's a program for experienced ministers to deepen our ministry. So, I'll be gone to the ocean to be lovely. I'll be back when I'm through blooming. You are such good church people, and you've stuck in this and through this all this time, through the fun parts and the challenging parts. You are such good people. Now, I know that the trees in the grove are officially silver poplars. And yet, silver poplars are in the same species as cottonwoods, and these guys are cotton. I mean, they throw that cotton at you like any good cottonwood. And I can't think of a better metaphor than another poem by Lynn Unger. So I will leave you with more words from the poet. Never forget. I'm getting to the words in a second here. Never forget what good, kind, well-meaning, and generous people you are. So continue to let yourselves be genuine and abundant and fling yourselves outward like the cottonwoods, which fill the air with spiraling flurries, covering lawns in deepening drifts. You could not call this generosity. Like any being, they let loose what they have in order to survive, in order that their lives might continue in a new year's growth. There is no hesitation. No one asks how much they will give. Without words, they know so clearly that everything depends on what we call giving, that which the world knows only as creation. Go ahead, be generous, abundant, human, good, perfect, flawed, amazing. Give what you have to the world, which so needs the fullness of your humanity. Be the church. Amen. And blessed be. If you will turn now to hymn number 131 in your gray hymnals. You may remember that I told you in the second verse of this, there's a line that says, you may give from deep within you. Sing it for me one last time. You can live from deep within you. If you'll rise in body or in spirit and join in singing.
To give in.
if you remain standing for the benediction and then be seated for a choral benediction. And then join us for coffee and conversation. As we have gathered, so now we depart. I leave you with the simple words of Julian of Norwich. And all will be well, and all will be well, and all manner of things will be well. Go forth in love, go forth in peace, go forth in your beauty and love. May it be so.